that was such a massive step for me, because I, you know, I was terrified of this, coming from kind of like a feminist mother that was really afraid of men, had been very, very dominated by her father. But I realized for me that, as you said, becoming old school again, if you are with an integrated, super conscious man that you know 100% that he has your best interest in mind, it's totally okay. And I think often very healthy if the man is a bit more in charge, because, you know, even sexually, when we think about a feminine, I think you know that, right? For us, it's all about letting go, relaxing. And when we're always in this stressed, controlling state, man, like I literally, my libido goes down. I just feel so overwhelmed.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited today. I have Veronica Amaya. She is a relationship coach with a specialty in authenticity and spirituality. And today our topic is the nice guy syndrome and why it's such a big turnoff, that nice guy. So some other things about Veronica: she loves helping women reconnect to their divine feminine, and then the polar opposite. She loves men, helping men connect back into their divine masculinity, like that roar, which is so exciting. Veronica is also really fun. She likes ecstatic dance. She's also a DJ. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, but that's kind of cool and fun. And her best friend and husband is named Matt. So Veronica, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about you, and maybe like, what kind of DJ are you?
Oh, it's so nice to have you, to be here on your podcast.
I know. You also have a podcast, don't you? Yeah. And the podcast hosts were like also interviewing at the same time.
So confused. But yeah, I'm originally from Germany. I live in England with my husband, Matt, and I'm a drum and bass DJ. So that's my, I don't know, do you know drum and bass? It's kind of like techno, but better. So yeah, I love that. It's like happy releasing anger. So yeah, it's very, very nice.
That sounds amazing. I can picture you with like big headphones on. You're like,
boom, boom, boom. Yeah, let's go.
That's awesome. So you mentioned in the intake form that you are moving to Mexico and you guys are going to start a family. What's going on with that?
Yeah, we have decided now. It's the rainiest summer in England since 1838. And I said to Matt, I'm never going to live in a cold country. That's it. So we thought, okay, what is kind of like not too expensive and like also a very warm culture. And we thought, oh, maybe Mexico. So we're just going to see. And yeah, we're also trying for babies. So who knows, maybe a little Jorge.
That's fun. My closest friends and also team members that work for me just came back from Baja, and they were like, Jen, it's so miserable in the summer. It's like literally 110 degrees and it's really buggy. So it may be too that you find like, okay, when it's nasty and I can't handle it, then like we leave for a few months and we just go somewhere a little cooler and less buggy. And then like the rest of the year, they're like, Mexico's freaking amazing.
Yes, we always think that in the summer we want to be here in Europe to see our families, basically. So that would be kind of like the plan. So yeah,
that's a great idea. Yeah, awesome. Okay, so today we're talking about nice guy syndrome, and I don't know about you, but and I'm sure that you're probably aligned with the same kind of thought process. But when number one, I always feel bad for the nice guy, you know, because it's like he's really good and he's super sweet and he opens the door for you and he's kind of in his feminine. Not that opening door is a feminine thing, but usually the nice guy is more like a feminine energy, right? And he's like your gay best friend, or he's your best friend that's not gay, but he's so feminine that he could be. And so you're just like, I love you for being my good friend. And the nice guy is like, but dude, I want to fuck you. Like, I don't understand why you don't understand what I'm saying through my signals. Like, I want to be with you. And she's like, oh no, I'm just picking up friend vibes. So can you talk to us a little bit about like this archetype of the nice guy and why maybe women don't actually want the nice guy?
Yeah. So I think you said it so perfectly. They are the typical guys who always get friend zoned by everyone, but women want to be around them because they feel very safe and very emotionally connected. So the biggest problem is that they are not in a polarity, which means we don't feel attraction, right? So if you're a woman and you're quite feminine here, and the guy is also quite feminine here, there is like nothing to to be attracted to, essentially, because he's basically almost like a woman. And if you're a hetero woman, you want the opposite, which is like, you know, the raw, masculine, powerful. And he is just very, very different than you. So I really think that it's a strategy with the nice guys, because, you know, how they originate very often is they have been brought up with a lot of viewpoints that masculinity is really, really bad and hurts women, essentially. So inside, they feel a lot of shame about being men. Often they also had mothers that maybe had a lot of trauma around men. So they kind of like unconsciously always say like castrate them. You know, it's a bit drastic, but they just kind of like want them to be more feminine. And they tell them, don't be so assertive, don't be so aggressive. And then there emerge these kind of like people pleasing, very safe feeling men, but yeah, you don't want to sleep with them. And it's so sad.
Yeah, it is so sad, because I think as a woman, to your point, they feel safe. Like, so my partner, Scott, is a great balance of nice guy, safe zone for women, and like super sexy. They also want to fuck him. Like, it's really an interesting dynamic, because I think for most men, you don't look at them and you're like, I want you to be my best friend. Let's hang out together. But he is very much like that. They feel safe with him. He's sensual. He's great with touch. He's great hugging. He's like, can massage your shoulders, and you don't feel like, okay, he's trying to get in my pants, but then like you want him to get in your pants. So how do you get from being a nice guy, because, you know, like we want nice men in the world, to being nice and craveable?
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing. So I would call your partner an integrated man. So someone that has all these emotional intelligence skills that we love, you know, like being able to connect, being able to read the room, being able to soothe you when you don't feel good. But at the same time, that they also own their own masculinity, so that they know when he wants to get you into bed, he knows how to do that. He knows how to seduce you. He is going to have his own opinion. You know, he's going to argue with you. He doesn't feel like someone that, you know, you can just blow over with a little wind, essentially. So yeah, so the first step for these guys is essentially that they first of all recognize that masculinity is not bad, is not wrong, it's beautiful, it's just the opposite of femininity. And of course there's shadow sides, right? Like violence and war and suppression of women, but there's also shadow in the feminine. It's the same thing, like manipulation, and also, you know, a lot of around sexuality, there's a lot of dark side within the feminine. Mm-hmm. So everything has a good side and a bad side. So just, you have to own it. And then also a big part of it is to become aware of your needs and to understand that, because in their minds, usually what nice guys believe, or how they have been brought up, is that if I am really, really nice, then the woman is going to fulfill my needs. And that's just not how it works. Because if you want her to fulfill your needs, you have to communicate about it, you have to be upfront, you have to tell her, and not have these, we call it like covert contracts, where they almost like, you know, collect points. Okay, now I cleaned the house and I went with the dog, and you know, that, so this means she owes me like sex, or you know, that stuff. Or the same as with friends, you know, with family, they have these scores. And people feel super uncomfortable around that, because it feels like manipulation. Mm-hmm. And the masculine is very upfront, you know, and you kind of like know what you get. And that's the interesting thing, actually, because we talked about safety. And on the one hand, the nice guys feel really safe, but because they have this manipulative part of them, they actually also feel very unsafe. And that's also another reason why women don't want to sleep with them, because they feel that they don't really know, you know, what they are about.
I have like so many questions. Okay, I'm going to take us back out big picture, and then we'll dive back into what you just said. I want to know about Matt. So clearly you're a feminine being. You appear feminine, you dress feminine, you even have a pink chair behind you. Like, you're this feminine essence. So tell us, what is it like, how does Matt show up, and what is it about him that makes him craveable to you instead of friend zone to you?
Yeah, so it's very interesting, because the reason why I know so much about it is because Matt, actually, when we met, was really a nice guy. And he believed that masculinity is bad, and that his thing was always, I'm different than other men, you know, I'm like the good one. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, actually, our relationship was more friendship, and it took me a while to feel attracted to him because of that. And through our relationship, then it always flared up that my attraction kind of like went down, and I always tried to tell him, hey, you need to be a bit more assertive. You know, you need to a bit more take charge in our relationship, because I know I appear feminine, but I'm also really dominant. And my whole family is kind of like much more dominant than Matt's family. So he went through this amazing transformation. And so what he did differently was that he always tells me exactly his opinion, and if I have a different opinion, we like argue about it. It's not like he just goes with whatever I want. And then he's much more sexually forward. So for example, during the day, he just comes to me, like just before, it was so nice. I was in the bedroom just dressing for the podcast, and he just came and he was like kissing me and touching me. And he was like, baby, I just wanted to give you some energy for the podcast, you know? And this is just, oh, so like, it gives yummy. Me so much. It makes me feel so like attracted to him.
Mm-hmm.
And a big thing was also actually for us with finances. And also with big life decisions, that I let him have the lead, so that I really, you know, trust in him, that he knows what's best for us. And that when it comes down, that he is kind of like the head of the household. And that was such a massive step for me, because I, you know, I was terrified of this, coming from kind of like a feminist mother that was really afraid of men, had been very, very dominated by her father. But I realized for me that, as you said, becoming old school again, if you are with an integrated, super conscious man that you know 100% that he has your best interest in mind, it's totally okay. And I think often very healthy if the man is a bit more in charge, because, you know, even sexually, when we think about a feminine, I think you know that, right? For us, it's all about letting go, relaxing. And when we're always in a stressed, controlling state, man, like I literally, my libido goes down. I just feel so overwhelmed. So yeah, that's what was our journey.
I love that, how you took a nice guy and helped him become a little bit, you know, more masculine and forward. And what's interesting, because as you were talking, I was looking back at the last like three major life partners that I've had. So my first husband was overly masculine, kind of like the bad guy masculine, the assertive but forceful, the my way or the highway. Everyone's an idiot but me. And he hasn't changed. He's the same fucking way right now, which is sad, you know, like that you can't grow out of that and realize that that's not actually how any woman wants to be around anybody. And nobody wants to be around a man like that, right? And there's a lot of women that portray the same thing, right? Like my way or the highway. I'm the smartest person in the room. Everyone else is stupid but me, and I can make all the best decisions for everyone. And then my second husband was the opposite. So I definitely chose a feminine partner there, where I was much more dominant, much more masculine, paid for everything, was in control of everything, and felt safe. Like I was with a nice guy and felt safe. And I needed that. Like I needed the safety and the nervous system recalibration and the safe container that he created for me to figure out who I was as I was leading and dominating and making all this money and leading the household. I also felt safe to be me and I joined a priestess program and learned about the feminine and the feminine archetype. And I started shedding all this masculinity that I've been holding as I have been in the retail world for so long, and had to work aside these men that have these massive careers, and I want to be one of them. So I'd like, it was this softening, I think, for about 8 years. And then we got to this point in our relationship where I started to get really curious about sex and my body, and I wanted to explore, and we opened up our marriage, and he decided that he didn't want to be a part of that. He wanted a very traditional, very vanilla relationship, and wasn't willing to try new things with me. And so we both just consciously uncoupled, and he's still in my life and still in my kids' life, and I'm so grateful for that. And then I have Scott, like the fully integrated man, where he is very like macho, manly. My youngest is like, Mom, he looks like a lumberjack, like a redheaded lumberjack. So we have that, but then this very, to your point, like emotionally intelligent, aware, safe, and incredibly sexual. Same thing. Like he'll come to me too and like nibble on my neck in the middle of the day. Or yesterday I was in the kitchen and I had about an hour to make lunch in between calls. And he starts, you know, like coming on to me in the kitchen. He was like, well, instead of eating, why don't we go play? And I was like, okay, let me run to the bedroom. And there's something about that feeling desired. And I've said craveable multiple times on this podcast. And that's not usually a word that I use, but that feeling of being craved and craving your partner, that is just so delicious.
Oh, 100%. And it's very beautiful. And do you know David Deida?
Mm-hmm. I love David Deida.
Because I think you described as three stages of the intimate communion, right? When it's first, I forgot the first word, but it's this, as you said, traditional relationship where there is maybe more polarity, but also it's unconscious and it's, you know, there's not a lot of love there. Mm. And then the second stage is the 50-50 relationship, which most people now, I think, are stuck in. It's this, okay, we are really good team partners. Maybe even the woman is more dominant. But yeah, there's not a lot of intimacy because there's no polarity. And then the third thing, and that's, I think, really what Matt and I are working towards. I think still we are a bit more in the process because, yeah, he did a lot of men's work, which is beautiful, right? Like that's where he really learned how to be this masculine. But working in a corporate world makes it so hard because you're always sucked in and he's all the time, he just spends... his energy is in his head, you know, he's not really feeling his body. He's not really, it would be so good. You know, I wish that we always had like somewhere where he could chop the wood literally because, you know, do things where you are like feeling this rawness. Mm-hmm. So that's also a bit my wish because he's going to quit his job. And then, yeah, I think it would be really nice for him. For me, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, you probably notice as a sexuality expert, how this working life is really so destructive because you're so always in your mind. Mm-hmm. And you, yeah, often at the end of the day, I'm not even feeling my body. So I have to do all these practices to get in touch with myself again. Yeah.
Like ecstatic dance party at the middle of the day, like lunch That's break really... plus ecstatic dance party, get in your body, do some movement. I love that. Okay. So we kind of identified what a nice guy is, what he looks like, and why it's not sexually appetizing to be with a nice guy. We've discussed what being a balanced embodied man looks like and how we both have these men and they're craveable and yummy and desirable and sexual and you know, like in their body. So let's talk, like, to me, part three is, okay, if someone's listening and they're like, okay, I got it. Like, now what do I do? So whether you're a woman and you have a man that is more nice guy that you want to be more masculine, or if you're a man listening and you're like, oh shit, I'm the 50-50. Like, I have given my woman so much power and so much control, and I've just stepped back because men are bad and I don't want to be that guy anymore. Like, I know my woman wants more from me. I know she wants me to lead. I know she wants me to step up. I know she wants me to become that craveable, fully integrated man. Like, what do these two sides of people do? What's action?
So for men, for people that think, oh my gosh, for men that think could be a nice guy, I would really recommend to read the book, No Mom is a Nice Guy, by Dr. Robert Glover. That is like the Bible for nice guys. And he describes so beautifully the journey from, you know, being such a people pleaser to being a really healthy male that is very attractive to women. And he underwent his own process and has coached like thousands of men. So it's really rich resource. And always remember, as you also said, that women really want that. Like, men never believe me that. They're like, no, she wants to be in control. No, she does not want to be in control, but she just has to trust you. So you have to set really strong boundaries with her, and that actually will give her safety. And for the women, so if you are with a partner and you think that he's a nice guy and you don't find that attractive, like, that's how it was in my case. I thought he's the perfect man. I do not want to lose that, but I cannot live like this. So what do I do? And the thing is that if you step away from being a controlling, very masculine woman, your partner will automatically start to fill this role, because in a relationship, there's always the feminine and the masculine, and someone will fill the role. So I actually, this is what I teach women in my coaching, is to step away from being this controlling woman, and to relax into femininity. And on a very practical level, it means don't tell your husband what to do. Don't tell him how to dress. Don't wake him up. Don't organize his life for him. When he's with the kids, leave, let him be, let him do his thing. Don't check up on him. Treat him like you would treat a man that you 100% trust and 100% respect. And that's really difficult for most women, because, you know, the controlling woman and the nice guy, they find each other perfectly. And very often, the women, they, since childhood, basically, they have a lot of control issues because of, you know, anxieties, because maybe of a chaotic household. But the journey for you is to make this experience actually, unlike in your childhood, when you step back, he is gonna fill this for you. He's gonna actually be like a father figure that you never had, a dependable man. Okay, depending, of course, that you are with a man that is, in general, like a good guy. But most of them really are. It's just that women never give them a chance because, as I said, they have these control issues, and then they feel so afraid to even to try. For example, a really good example is, let's say you are out with your friends and your husband is with your kids, mm-hmm. that you feel so afraid that maybe he's going to give them not a good lunch, you know, or he plays, you know, something a bit more, he lets them play some more adventurous things. But if you really step back, you will find that the kids don't die, and it's totally right that he is doing his own thing. Like, that's a good thing, actually. They should do different things with dad. So, and that's a really good message for women, because you're not helpless. There's many things that you can do, and actually it will also relax you, because yeah, on the other side of a nice guy, there's always a woman that is hyper stressed.
I can see that. Yeah. Take the gift that they're giving you of, you know, taking the kids away and doing their own thing. And you're right. I think kids need the balance of like fun, playful dad who, you know, gives you ice cream for lunch and takes you to the park and rough houses with you, versus like hopefully sweet, loving mom, and not over controlling, scary mom. But I can see exactly what you're saying, where moms are like, did you feed them a balanced lunch? Did you put them down for a nap? And he's like, no, but I kept them alive.
Yes, totally. And I think that I always find it so sad that you know, there's these jokes in our society that men are like children, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just because women have set the standard. They're like, oh, this is what's the right thing to do. And I'm not saying, of course, objectively, it's good to give them a healthy meal. But at the same time, maybe there's something there that, for example, the dad is maybe more fun and more relaxed. And it's just a different dimension of experience for the kids, you know? And I find it just sad that so many women don't trust this grown man, you know, who lived all his life, who is probably providing for the whole family, that they don't trust him, that he can do something as simple as take care of the kids. Do you see what I mean? Like,
oh, I do. And I can't imagine how that feels for the fathers who were like, I'm just trying to be supportive and I'm trying to do the right thing and I'm trying to step up, but all my wife does is bitch and nag and tell me I'm not doing it right and I didn't fold the laundry right. And yes. I find a little bit of that creep in, and it's not for me. And it's normally when I'm really stressed out, when I'm feeling the burden of financially being the provider for everybody. And I also am maintaining the house and I'm cooking the meals. And my family has really learned in the last year and a half that Scott has been in our life, he has really not only like leveled up what men do, you know, like our version of like, oh, this is what men are supposed to do in the house. Okay, cool. And then like holding the kids accountable. I have teenagers, girl, like they should be helping. And I just kind of like let them do whatever, because I only had them part-time. And so when they weren't with their dad, they were with me. And so I was like, oh, you don't have to do anything. But then I was so stressed because I was doing all of it. And so he's like, no, let them take the trash out. Let them do the dishes. Let them fold the laundry. Like, they need these life skills. And so as I've stepped back and let him not only like help, but like lead the kids and like lead us. And I'm like, oh, this feels so good. Oh, it feels so good. Like you can just drop everything that you're holding. Like my whole body just kind of melts. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, you're describing it so perfectly, what the masculine brings to the family, and this different dimension, right? Because you would have maybe not even had the idea that this is something that your teenage kids can do. Oh, I find it beautiful that you let him provide this for all of you. Oh, that's just such a great example. And I also wanted to just add one point is that, you know, a bit of maybe a sad point is with this hypercritical woman that I think a lot of the time when there is infidelity on the man's part, this is often the root cause that as soon as he steps into the house, he gets criticized, he gets belittled. There is no, like, imagine a guy who has a high-flying career and he's a respected, you know, manager, and then he comes home and he feels like a loser, you know? And of course, you know, this is not an excuse. Everyone has to take self-responsibility. And I really encourage men to set more boundaries with women. But at the same time, this is very often, it's kind of like understandable how it happens when there's maybe a younger PA or, you know, colleague that really admires him and gives him this respect. So I wanted to encourage all women. This is one of the biggest things I've learned is also to not criticize my husband for every little thing. And I agree with you. It also creeps in with me when I'm stressed, but I learned more and more to immediately apologize. And it has been also such a relationship saver. And it really keeps the harmony and also the attraction, because that could also be a big thing. Why also, you know, men are not attracted, why nice guys are not attracted to the women if they constantly feel that she's basically like his mom, you know, telling him he didn't clean up and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I find it interesting that we do find partners that are similar to what we know. So we might be attracted because they're like our dad, not like in a gross way, but like the good qualities, right? Or they're like our mom in the good qualities. And then eventually we become smothered by them, you know, like the mother, the smothering mother. Or the overprotective father or the whatever, right? And yeah, I can imagine showing up and letting that like ease and ooze into your relationship. It is really gross. And I do occasionally, you know what I found? Now that I have been partnered 3 times and, you know, married twice, I still call my partner Scott his mom, like my in-law, because we're essentially married just without the documents, right? But I notice when she's around, I get hypercritical of him. And I did the same thing with my last husband's mother. When she was around, like my nagginess would up level because both of them are naggy and both of them showed up very similarly. Like, this is my son and I know what's best for him and I will order his lunch for, like, just weird stuff where I'm like, so yeah. Oh my God, the patterns just repeat. And we just have to be mindful that we're repeating the pattern of our parents, right? We're being the nagging wife. And I love what you said about if he is freaking rocking it at work, or she is freaking rocking it at work, because that's my side, right? And you come home and you're just being, and I've never had a partner, a male partner nag me, but I can imagine that feeling of, God, now I got to go home and like deal with the kids and my wife who's such a bitch and I'm not respected and I'm not loved and I'm not, you know, no one appreciates what I do all day. Yeah, I can absolutely imagine like having a little fling at the office, right? Before you go home into, you know, yuckiness until you get to go back to the office and be a superstar again.
100%. And I really wish that both men and women, because I feel like there is a lot of the emphasis on, you know, having like a really nice house and having such a good education for the kids. Mm-hmm. And those are, of course, important things, but I wish that they would also emphasize the respect. And for example, saying thank you in a relationship is so freaking powerful. And saying thank you for something like providing, you know, many people think, oh no, this is just what they should do, you know, this is what I can expect. I'm like, no, if someone goes 5 days a week, 8 hours, busts his ass for the family, I think, yes, you can say thank you every day. So I'm like, oh, I appreciate it so much, honey. Just simple things like this. And I would never, if I would have this feeling that Matt when he works from home, but let's say we would go to an office and he would dread coming home. That would be my worst nightmare. I mean, he is a person that chose to be with me for the rest of my life, right? I want him to feel adored by me and that I love him so much. So this is one of my really big goals with my work and also my sharing on YouTube, that I bring this, because it's not so hard, you know. It's just that most of us had really bad role models for relationships, and so we just unconsciously do the same things again and again. But I always want to encourage people to think about your childhood. Do you want your kids to have the same freaking experience? Like, my parents were always fighting, always, and I always said to myself, if I have a marriage like this, then I would feel so bad thinking that they, you know, experience the same as me, when it's not so difficult, you know, to just get on, especially if you, my parents in general like each other. They just have horrible communication skills. So and then 3 years ago, when they realized we are always fighting, it's the same pattern, I was like, no, something has to stop. And now we have so much harmony and it's just fun. Like, I love being with him, you know. Do you have the same with your
Oh yeah, partner? Yeah. And he also is like just across the little hallway from me all the time. So I think being in proximity, like creating a life where you can also be in close proximity with your partner, really helps. It helps like create and keep the sexual tension, assuming that you're nice and friendly to each other and you're playful throughout the day. I find it's nice and it's easier. And then when the kids are off at school, you can have fun in the middle of the day. It's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, and I know not everybody can, but I've worked really hard to create a life where I can have a lot of flexibility and be close to the people, you know, that I love the most. So, Well, Veronica, if people are listening or watching and they're like, okay, I have identified, this is me. Like, I am the naggy wife, or I am the husband who is the 50-50 or the nice guy. And I want to work towards being more my masculine and taking that back. How can people find more information about you? What programs do you have? Do you do coaching one-on-one? Like, what are all of your offerings?
Yes. So the easiest way to find me is to go on my website, veronica-amaya.com. And I offer one-on-one coaching for both men and women. I also do a lot of dating coaching because, this is the big question of our day, right? Like, how to find a partner, especially when you are in our 30s or 40s. It's quite a challenge. So I focus on that. And I also do courses sometimes, specifically around the topic of the healthy feminine masculine polarity. So yeah, you can find all the information on there. And yeah.
Perfect. So I'll put Veronica's link tree in the bottom. When you guys are finished listening or watching this, if you would stop and follow her. So if she has something coming up in this next year that you want to go be a part of, and you want to, you know, get more information on polarity and building that masculine and feminine flow back into your life, she is the lady to teach you how to do it. So Veronica, thank you so much for being on. I'm grateful to have you. This was a fabulous discussion, and it definitely reminds me to just settle in, be softer, and be in my feminine.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Hey there. Did you know that I do online coaching? Yes, I do online coaching in the sex and relationship space. Some of the topics that are near and dear to my heart are open relationships. So that includes polyamory, swinging, or what we call the lifestyle. I also love conversations around online dating. We're talking Bumble, Tinder, Field, and more. And then the last thing that's really passionate and close to my heart is conscious uncoupling. That means we get to break up with people with love and respect, with dignity and hope. We get to create a life for our children that gets to be